Captain.
Stand by.
Here's a special news bulletin.
Stand by for action.
This is James Arthur Janczyk, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire. Feet. Sunday evenings. Live. How do you listen?
Fire.
www.feettofire.com for more information.
The Unabridged Universe. Join us from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time, Saturdays, as host Jason Wilson and I, Victoria Rose, bring you the perspectives of guests on every topic, from extraterrestrials on the edge of the galaxy to issues that affect you right here at home. It's a big universe out there, and we're likely to cover anything. Do you have any topics that you'd like to have discussed? Know any researchers or free thinkers out there you'd like to have on the show? Log on to www.unabridgeduniverse.com. And let us know, only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
What would you do if you knew all the things we know? Would you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away to?
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host, Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts. Ignorance kills.
What would you do?
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome to this June 5th edition of the Dawn of Shades. I am your host, Gia Scott. I am so very thrilled tonight. We start with our new format, a full two-hour program, and I hope that it means many more interesting guests and questions and answers as we embark on our journey towards learning a little bit more about the lesser-known facets of our world. The show is still very young and still growing and changing and evolving, and you, the listeners, have a great deal to do with how you're here to talk with me and answer questions. So, as my butt, so to speak, you need a way to voice your opinions, your likes and your dislikes, and who you would like to hear on the show. Here's how you can do that. You can email me at giascott@gmail.com. That's G-I-A-S-C-O-T-T @gmail.com. Just that simple. Say what's on your mind. Tell me what you want to hear, the topics you would like to see me explore with our guests, whatever you feel like you need to get off your chest. Do keep it polite, though. Now, with the expanded show, we can get more in-depth interviews, or we can have double guests. Just gives us all a greater opportunity to explore ideas. We have some great guests and topics this month, too. We'll start off the month with Michael Lentzman. A fascinating guest who's explored more ideas and concepts in depth than I have probably even thought about. I'm certain you will be thrilled to listen to him tonight. Next week is Michelle, and we'll hear about spirituality and love and explore some new ideas with her. Linda Drake, the author of Reaching Through the Veil to Heal, appears on the third show of the month, and we'll explore grief and healing after loss with her. And then we'll end the month with the mysterious Mr. Wade, as we venture into the world of New Orleans' voodoo and hoodoo and separate the pop culture image from the reality. Sometimes the amazing amount of information and ideas out there make me very sorry that I can only do one show a week, which brings me to another little plug. This show has no sponsors. And like everything else, it takes money to run Paranormal Radio Network and the individual shows. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring this show or any other show on the network, please email me at giascott@gmail.com. There is no better time to advertise with us than when we are a young and growing network. And you will be contributing to hearing the kind of great programming that brought you here to listen to begin with. Archives for this show, as well as other shows, is available, still free of charge, at www.paranormalradionetwork.org, and you can always voice your opinions by emailing me. Now that we've gotten the business out of the way, we can move on to the fun stuff. As I said, tonight's guest is Michael Lentzman. Michael, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, Joe.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear that. I have a lot of questions for you, and I'm sure the audience does as well.
We have a lot of answers for you, Joe.
I think you'll do just fine. For those listeners in the United States, you can call in questions at 1-877-786-0562 or join the virtual audience in Pal Talk. Now, Michael, could you give a brief introduction to yourself for our audience?
Brief. Okay, I've authored three books. Secrets of the Ancient Incas is probably my favorite, a modern approach to the ancient rituals and practices of the Incas. Spiritual Business is about the amazing history of Magical Blend magazine over its over 25 years of existence, from being birthed in my living room in San Francisco to becoming an international magazine. Secrets of the Amazon Shamans speaks of travels that my family and I have done in Latin America around the Amazon basin and the amazing magical workers there that we've met. I've appeared in a number of anthologies, from healing the heart of the world to hot chocolate for the mystical soul, a magical universe and solstice shift among them. I've been the publisher and CEO of Magical Blend Magazine, Natural Beauty and Health Magazine, and Transitions Magazine over the last 20-so years. And I love to travel. I live in the country when I'm not busy writing with my family on a farm in Northern California with my horses and dogs.
Sounds like a great life.
It ain't bad. I just got back from 2 weeks in the Caribbean and was able to visit some seven islands and meet with some amazing people there. So I say thanks a lot.
Ah, that does sound like great. Now, there are a lot of topics that I want to explore with you, and it's hard to choose a starting point. But I guess the first thing I would like to know is, what is the difference between a magician and a shaman?
Magician, in my book, and again, you're going to get a number of definitions in the magical realms from all sorts of ilk and belief systems. But from my experience, a magician is much more in the European tradition, one who works with alchemy and spells, where a shaman is more pre-European or other than European. Most of our ancient cultures had witch doctors, healers, voodoo priests, those who spoke for the village or the tribe to the gods and goddesses, were able to travel to the realm of the dead and back. These are your shamans. They exist still in the isolated pockets in the Amazon, in the Andes Mountains, in New Guinea, anywhere that there's that our civilization hasn't corrupted the old ways or destroyed the old ways. And what you have is much more where the magician, although is aware of the energies of nature, the shaman works very much with nature in sync with it and riding the waves of the energy, utilizing the powers and the in syncness of nature. How's that for a lot of words for a simple question?
Actually, I thought it was a great answer.
Thank you.
You know, it really did kind of clarify things.
Oh, good, good.
You know, because you do. You wonder, well, what's the difference, you know?
Oh, and there's so many. I mean, you can, over the years, Magical Blend Magazine has been a great tool for me in that it was an education. I started it for a number of reasons, but what it turned out is to, on one level, is to allow me to speak with weavers of magic of every level, from witches to people who spoke with elves, from sorcerers to magicians, from shamans to alchemists, and to see, to be able to separate the shaft from the grain, and to see what people really have, how they define themselves, and what really works out there, and what's a lot of words in show.
I can actually really understand that, because since I started hosting this show and becoming, I guess, more educated about the paranormal in general, you know, the guests are fascinating to me.
They really are, and it puts you in a position. We did a show for a number of years, and we did a TV show in San Francisco for a number of years, and it just puts you in a position where you get to compare and contrast and ask the in-depth questions and learn and try things out on your own, and then you're in a position to give to your listeners that other level as each level of the onion of reality unpeels, because most of us are trained, and stop me when I get carried away, but most of us are trained that reality is the material world and what we can perceive with our five senses. And shamans and people in the pre-European cultures understood that reality is so much wider than that, that the levels of perception are so much more expanded than our five senses, that there are dimensions that far exceed the material world. And that if we hone our senses, our extended senses, and our ability to perceive, that we can move in these realms, we can draw energy from these realms, we can draw inspiration and even power from these realms to make our day-to-day reality in our material world so much more effective and rewarding for us and all we come in contact with.
You know, and that's great, you know, but at the same time, I know you're fully aware of it too. So often, you're dealing with someone who's selling you a bill of goods, you know, and there's no more...
discretion is what I urge those people so much.
You're sitting there and you're listening to them and you're like, I know this is the Emperor's New Clothes.
Right.
I know that's what they're selling me right now because I'm just not getting this idea at all, and the more they explain it, the less sense it's making.
And,
you know, and then the whole concept of you got to be worthy to get the idea, come on now, you know.
Yeah, worthy is a nice thing, but it's like, okay, can I have some baby steps and can I try them out and can they work? And by the way, how's your life and the quality of your existence? And I've met so many people who have the secret to a wonderful existence and are just miserable. I have met great authors and great creative people in so many fields. All of them have feet of clay or their weaknesses, but many of them have great abilities or great insights into certain areas. If they can give us those that we can use in our day-to-day life, then more power to them. But if they're just talking to make themselves look bigger or to make it look like they have the answers or to confuse people, then what's the sense?
Exactly. I mean, you know, because we need real information.
That's it.
You know, and we need real ideas and, you know, to really understand. And so often that really understanding part can become so very difficult.
So many people get lost in the esoteric, the occult, the metaphysics, and they forget about the day-to-day. How am I doing with my interactions with my people that I deal with every day, the people at work, my family, the people I meet on the street? If you can't bring magic or shamanism or spirituality into your every moment, into your every interaction, then what's it worth?
Exactly. You know, if it only works when you're sitting around with your candles and crystals and oils and herbs, then
it's not all that effective.
Exactly. You know, because face it, most of us can't carry all that paraphernalia around with us all day long.
No, when we first started Magical Blend Magazine many years ago, we almost called it Spirituality and Creativity Can Sell. It was a crash name, but what we wanted to tell people was that you could tune the car going 80 miles an hour down the highway. You could be creative, be spiritual, find fulfillment while you're raising children, running a business, and trying to pay the bills. And I like to think my life kind of proves that, and I've met people along the path who do that far better than I. And it's about our perspective, it's about our expectations, it's about our ability to make ourselves believe that we deserve better, and our ability to persist against all odds.
That's a very important thing, because it's a fact of life. As we go through life, we're going to hit speed bumps, and some of them might even be the size of the Grand Canyon or Mount Everest and everything in between. And if you can't face the obstacles of life and get through it and come out on the other side and still be a decent human being, you know,
When I travel to third world countries, especially to Latin America, recently in the Caribbean, I see the levels of poverty that most people in the world have to deal with, and I see how they do it with a smile, and how they value the other people in their lives, how they fight against the odds of not having an education, not having much of an income, being surrounded by disease and poverty. And I come back to the United States and I hear people complain about the most inane things. And it's really, if these people can enjoy life and find time to sing and celebrate, then what are we doing here in the United States?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times, a lot of forget that it's not a game of he who dies with the most toys wins.
Exactly the opposite, really. It's great to have comfort as going through life. We don't have to suffer in order to be spiritual or creative. I've run into a lot of people that have that myth. They feel that if they have prosperity and then they can't be creative or spirituality. We can have all three and much more, but it's not about just how wealthy we can get, how much we can earn. It's about the quality of each moment and what we bring into it, and how much we are able to break the brainwashing of our material society, of our consumer society, and find out what really makes us happy and what really feeds our soul along the way.
So, along these lines, can you define for me and the audience what an enlightened person really is?
Well, you know, again, when we started Magical Blend magazine and even before that, I had this image that I would sit at the feet of enlightened masters and I would have the answers of what is truth and what spirituality truly I defined to me. And I have. I've been able to sit in the Andy Mountains with shamans who can pull off magic that's beyond our belief system, and in the Amazon jungle, and in other parts of the world. But, as I said earlier, everyone has feet of clay. Everybody has their own weaknesses. I think in our world today, this isn't a perfect planet. It's a level that we decided to incarnate into, to be born into, so that we could learn to deal with limitations. Defining enlightenment, I think, is really those who are able to smile regardless of what's happening, those who are able to know that there is a much grander reality than their own, those who are able to touch into the spiritual essence and have it not only feed their souls, but enrich the lives of all those they come in contact with. Do I know anyone that does it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? In my wide travels, in my huge numbers of interviews and meeting amazing people, I've met very few that come close to that. Have I met people who can do it on and off? Some who do it more than not? Quite a few out there.
Yeah, you know, I guess I go through life looking at it. So, you know, is this an extreme simplification? Rather like a bank balance. You know, your good karma versus your bad karma sort of thing. And, you know, you try to keep a positive balance just like you do with your bank account.
It's true. And no matter what level you evolve to or you develop on, there's always challenges on this planet. As you said, there's always speed bumps. Some of them are as wide as the Grand Canyon. There's always going to be, you're always going to make mistakes. If you don't take great risks, if you don't make great efforts, you won't make great mistakes, but you won't be able to grow or benefit either. But when you make those, it's not about not making them. It's about how you deal with them when they happen. When you make mistakes, when you fall into temptation, when you go down the wrong path, it's about stopping yourself, forgiving yourself and those who helped get you there, and rectifying your path, picking yourself out of the mud, and seeing how far you can get until you make that mistake again.
You know, maybe it's, you know, it's like children, okay? When they're learning how to do something, never let them make a mistake. They never have a chance to learn.
So much so. And
so
really,
you have to let them fall down and skin their knees so they learn. Skinning your knee hurts. Don't do that.
And that's it. And if we look at our lives that way, people who expect that they're going to, if they pray so many hours a day or if they do so much ritual or if they meditate so much, that life all of a sudden is going to just change to one of perfection and everything perfect. My news is no. I haven't seen that. Will it get better? Yeah. Will there be more good? Yeah. Will the failures happen less often? Maybe. But will we be able to deal with it better? If you develop the right attitude, then you know you get through them. The more experience you have, the more successes you have, you realize that life is going to give you lemons. And your responsibility is to learn how to make the best lemonade out of that you can.
Yeah. Now, you know, our modern society, it has a funny way of regarding education. Usually it's something formally achieved at some nice little sturdy building sitting in a town someplace. And then the value of that education is then determined by some mysterious formula It considers who their teachers were, what the school's name was, whether their football team was a winning one, and how much the tuition cost. Now, if someone was going to try to achieve enlightenment through that route, is there even a university or college that offers a degree on how to enlighten modern
man? I believe there are some now that actually, some that are even respected. The California Institute of Integral Studies is one that comes to mind. The JFK graduate program in the Bay Area of San Francisco is another that I'm aware of that actually do offer. And then there's some that are less accredited, so to speak. Online, you would be amazed. There's a University of Metaphysics out there. There's a group that will give you a degree in witchcraft from New Hampshire. You name it, this day with the internet and how many TV stations, channels are available, you can find almost anything. Will they be effective in developing your spirituality and creativity? It's the same as anything else. Any two people that go through an experience, even if they witness a car accident, which is really intense, if you interview them right after that, you're going to hear two totally very different stories. And if you wait a few weeks, you're going to hear even more different stories. And a year, my God, you're not sure it was on the same planet, never mind the same car accident. So as people go through experiences, what they get out of that has a lot to do with what they had to bring to it and what they were willing or able to learn at that time and where they were aimed to get on the other side of it. And again, I use a lot of words, but what that amounts to is you can get a great education. I have friends who are millionaires who didn't finish high school.
And, you know, a formal education does not make a wise person.
Exactly. And some of the most spiritual people I have met, some of the most closest to enlightened people I have met, didn't even know what approved education was. They lived in what we would consider inaccessible areas and had a whole other level of education. Is this always superior? No. Can you learn spirituality and true spirituality and creativity and develop a meaningful life at Harvard or Yale? Sure. Do most people? I have questions. What a lot of people get a lot out of your established institutions, your colleges, and what have you, but it has a lot to do with how much you use discretion. And that's a word that I use a lot in my workshops and lectures. Whenever I read a book, whenever I listen to a teacher, whenever I meet a spiritual person, I listen with an open mind. I try not to be so judgmental that I dismiss what they say because it's not my experience, yet I do use a certain level of discretion. As you were saying earlier, is this person just trying to impress me? Is this person just trying to further their own program? Or is this person truly someone who is on a path that works, that will give something for me in my life? And if we bring that to all the different things we have, more people would be turning off the TV every night and spending time reading and meditating and praying.
Well, and just because you turn off the TV doesn't necessarily mean I haven't watched TV most of my adult life.
Oh no, you can go without media and not become
enlightened. I wouldn't say that I'm a real spiritual person. Maybe more spiritual than some and less than others, you know.
Exactly, and once we compare ourselves to anyone else, we always fall into the pit of saying, you know, just that. There's always those that are better. There's always those that know more, and there's always those that know less or can do less. But what's important is our society has, in the Western world especially, has just been put under a spell of the material world that we've been talking about and consumerism. Before Europe went forth and had its effect, Western society on the world, most of the ancient societies, the priests at least and the healers and shamans, had an understanding that it's hard for the Western mind to even grasp. It was non-linear. It wasn't about yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It was about the interconnectedness of seasons. It wasn't about I stop here and nature begins over there. It was about we are all connected on some level very deeply, and that can be utilized by people. And it wasn't about being victims or being powerless. It was about there was as much power and as much possibilities for each individual as they were willing to step up and try to take on or think they deserved. And those sort of things, concepts and ways of viewing reality still exist out there for people who want to take the time to make the time to expand their spiritual essence, their knowledge base, and their creative expressions.
You know, and that interconnectedness is such, you know, in the world that we have today, it's really taking on a whole new meaning. First of all, we have the internet, which allows us to speak daily to people, you know, on the other side of the world, literally.
Literally.
And another is that anything that happens in one country affects all the other countries.
So much so.
Just because you draw an imaginary line and say, okay, on this side of the line, we're not going to pollute, but on that side of the line, you can do whatever you want to, doesn't mean that it's not going to affect everybody.
Well, no.
We fail to recognize that what we do here can affect someone in Missouri or Asia or South America.
Not only can, but does. When I was in the Caribbean, I was unaware that what had happened in the 60s, I believe it was the 60s, was that German scientists found out how to extract sugar from beets. And this information led to number of European and U.S. farmers planting sugar beets, which led to the U.S. and Europe not buying much sugar cane, which was the crop of the Caribbean islands, which led to just a devastation of their whole economies that they haven't yet recovered from. So what you have now is tourist money propping up their economies and large numbers of people living in dire poverty because one scientist in Germany figured out how to take sugar in a high-minded fashion, meaning the best for all concerned, how to find sugar from sugar beets. What we do as a first world society, how we consume, if we shop at Walmart versus if we make our own, grow our own produce in a garden, has a huge effect on how people live in the rest of the world.
Yeah, and we really, so often, we don't think about it. You know, it's become a global economy. Things are so different than they were 100 years ago or even 50 years ago.
And they'll be much more different in 10 years than we can even imagine, I would predict. Many of us who have traveled to Latin America believe that we're at a crossroads and that the energy that's been coming on the planet for the last 2,000 years has been a very male energy, the spiritual energy that's been coming on through the Near East and Jerusalem and Tibet and the Himalayas, and that was just the energy, the spiritual energy we needed for the last 2,000 years, but the energy is shifting, and the energy that's coming in now is a female energy. We call it the Pachamama energy because she was the goddess of the Incas, the earth goddess of the Incas, and it's a very different spiritual energy. It's an energy of empowerment, of nurturing, of healing, of caring, of teamwork, of building consensus, and this kind of energy is very available in places like Machu Picchu and the Amazon jungle and Lake Titicaca, and most of your holy sites. And when people just meditate on this energy or connect to this energy, they bring in a whole more self-empowering, less victimhood energy into their day-to-day existence. And what we're going to see in the next 10 years is just where we now have cell phones and the internet, I would predict before 25 years, we'll have a level of telepathy that will make those electronics passe.
Yeah, you know, so many, many changes. And, you know, even over 10 years ago, I'd go watch people like in a mall or whatnot. And I would swear up and down, it's like mankind is splitting into two different species. know, the people and the not people is the only way I could put it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can, if you want to, I've heard people use the Star Trek analogy of Borgs being automated people. And again, this taps into that switching of energies that I spoke of. The Mayans, whose calendar ends in 2012, predicted that the world would basically split in half in some ways. That what you've said is so accurate. Quetzalcoatl, the winged serpent, they said would return, and he would bring with him as much as humanity as wanted to go into the better future, as were willing to. But he didn't care if it was one human or 10 billion humans. It was up to each human to decide whether or not they came onto this life to accept their power and their limitless potential to become gods and goddesses in their own right, or whether they needed to take another 2,000 or more years to learn the lessons. And that there was no judgment from the gods or goddesses or spiritual beings, that, or the divine force, whatever you want to call it, that each human decides every moment and can redecide every moment if they need to go back and re-experience the vibrations that have existed in past histories on another Earth or a separate Earth, or if they want to raise up their vibrations into a more evolved planet that will have a positive effect on all of the universe.
That's fascinating. Well, Michael, we have a question from the virtual audience. Prism of Light, if you come to the mic, state your first name and your location, and you are live and on the air with Michael Landsman.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Hello, how are you? Nice to speak with you, Michael. Michael, I heard that when you were speaking that there was a male or female that was returning to Earth, and as I understand, in my understanding is that when we return to spirit, we are neither male nor female anymore. It's the fact that why we have that sex is here as humans on Earth, as we incarnate here, is what we choose our sex. And so my question is for you, that how do you determine that this spirit that is seems to be the majority that is returning for work here is male nor female? And that's my first part of my question. My second part of my question is that being a clairvoyant that I am, and seeing that spirit seems to be only an arm's reach away from the earth realm or earth level, that there isn't that resonation, or they're not transforming, whatever you want to call it, up into that higher divine realm or any of a higher realm, that they are staying here on that first level. Do you have an answer for that, and why that there is so many, and these are not earthbounds, and these are not ones who have unfinished business. This seems to be as high as they go. And thank you for your answer.
Okay, I think I can talk now. Great. The first one, yes. As we get into the dimensions, not much higher, spirit does not have sex. She's right. There's a level of asexuality or multisexuality that exists. I wasn't saying so much that a spirit was returning as a spiritual energy, that each 2,000-year period in our history has had an energy of sorts that has come through that is available to the spiritual leaders of that time, that are available to those who want to tap into this energy of spirit of that time, and that the energies of the last 2,000 years were very male. That's why you had mostly male spiritual leaders and teachers over that period of time, and why we had so much warfare, and why we had a male-dominated society, because those were the experiences that humanity needed to learn at that point in time to be able to make the next step in its evolution, and that now what's coming onto the planet is a female energy, which is much more nurturing and healing and caring, and that is the energy that's much more available. And what we'll see is a much more cooperative, less warlike, more spiritual, more nurturing, sensitive energy over the next 2,000 years for those who choose to evolve into that. Why people aren't evolving, or entities aren't evolving, and I wasn't quite clear which she was asking, but it's a matter of where we need to be. And you get a little bit esoteric here, but let's just use angels as an example. If angels were painting the picture of humanity, when we paint, we use blacks and browns in order to offset the reds and the yellows and the blues, and you need them all to round out the picture. Perhaps on Earth, we need suffering and pain and disappointment to a certain degree, challenges at very least, so that we can evolve spiritually. So if we don't have some form of limitations, then we can't overcome them. If we don't have death at the end of our lives...
Well, essentially, like, we're skinning our spiritual knees.
Yeah, very much so, which you had said before, which is a wonderful example. And some entities have chosen, some spiritual entities, some humans, have chosen to be at this level now, and basically that's where they need to be for the next period of time. We could go into very esoteric explanations. Some people believe that when they die, they don't believe in any spirituality, and they believe when they die, they're dead. When you bury the body, the spirit dies. I've seen them in astral realms laying there, their astral beings sound asleep, waiting until either some event occurs or they just get tired of sleeping and wake up and go, oh, I was wrong. And then they're ready for their next level of spiritual evolution. Angels don't, or the spiritual entities or spiritual energies or the divine or God doesn't care how long it takes us, because time doesn't matter any more than sex matters on the other spiritual realms. But
it sounds like you're all, you know, what you're describing just now sounds like what we think, what we believe, actually even shapes reality for us.
It does, so much so. And I've proven that, and I've watched so many people prove that time and again. If people just realized how powerful their thoughts were, their words were, their minor actions are, I've watched myself convince myself that I can pull off miracles and pull them off for months on end. And then something will happen that'll eat away at my belief or make me question whether I wasn't just being lucky, and I start stumbling. And then things go bizarre or wrong, and I fall out of the sky because I think I can't fly anymore, so to speak.
Well, I have this, I've always used this image, you know, and I make fun of, I call them the ladies of fate, and they're like Red Hat Society ladies, I'm dressed all goofy. They're in a jury box, you know, up somewhere, and they look down at me, and they're like, oh, well, let's see what you can do with this, and they chuck something at me.
Very much so.
You know, yeah, you know, that's always been the vision that I've had of how I arrive at some of my strange problems.
And I've heard it explained, that we're really near limitless beings, each one of us, gods and goddesses. We choose to incarnate or be born onto this earth so that we can learn how to, the wonderful victories of overcoming limitations, of not feeling like we have enough love, not enough money, not enough time, that distance is too hard to overcome, that energy, with not enough energy. If we can deal with these limitations and still develop a wonderful life, we can do even more. And that only part of us incarnates, so we sort of leave up other fractions of ourselves up there, and that's those ladies in the jury box up there throwing things at you. It's almost like other parts of yourself or your soul group. I've heard a call.
I'm gonna have to have a talk with those ladies. You know, I really had enough of their crap here lately.
Oh no! You asked for it. We just forget. If we remembered it all when we were born, then it wouldn't be such an adventure to live through. You know, I mean, I love traveling and I love going to far off remote areas, but I love more looking forward to it and planning all the details and then looking back on it and telling people all about it. Being there usually is hot as hell. But if you're not there, then you can't have the experiences, and you can't have the bugs eating you alive in the Amazon or the fear of a snake jumping out of the water or any of that sort of insecurity that comes with it. We have to, you know, if you don't work, you can't eat. We have to pay the dues along the way to have the growth and development and joy of existence.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea of that we influence our reality, you know, it really opens up a whole new cupboard of possibilities. A big cupboard, too.
A huge cupboard, an amazing cupboard.
And because it means you have to accept responsibility for the
passions
that hit you, too.
That's it. If people realize that if they could control their beliefs, their desires, their expectations, and their intent of we so often, if people just make notes during the day of how they think, so often we go, ooh, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. Ooh, I don't want that to happen. Well, what if that happens? What if that goes wrong? And we're spending all this energy, and it's a lot like going into a forest, a virgin forest. We're making chips on the trees or leaving piles of rocks to put a trail. And if we're putting all our energy into going, this is the wrong way, don't go here, this is the wrong way, don't go there, we're spending all our time bringing the wrong way to us. Our fears, our doubts, those are the enemy of humanity. But if we spend our time, when we catch ourselves thinking like that, if we go, oh, but what I'd like to have happen is this. Oh, but what happened last time that I really enjoyed was this. Oh, what I could probably make happen if I gave it enough energy is this. Oh, if I really work at it, I can create this. If we catch ourselves and retune our thinking and our focus and stay focused on what we want to have happen and what we hope to have happen, we can manifest so much better.
I think my mother must have been a very wise one, because the entire time I was growing up, if you started the "but what if" sort of syndrome going on, she's like, "Don't program yourself for failure."
That's it. Beautiful. I'd say very wise, because that's the key. That's what most of humanity gets stuck doing right now. And when we were talking about the TV before, God, it's almost like there's a group of people out there that want us to think that way, that want our minds to focus on violence and stupidity and failure and a lack of power. But if you spend too much time with video games or the TV or newspapers or that in movies, any sort of media, you get that message reinforced so many ways in your unconscious, and you start worrying all the time and living in your fears. Where if we train ourselves to catch ourselves and stop that, you know, to use media and not have it, not become enslaved to it, to use the internet but not get lost in it, then we can program ourselves. We can replace that with, people don't realize how important their own creative expression is, because our school systems teach them that they can't be really creative.
I remember an encounter with a school psychologist over my kids.
Oh my God, me too.
I sit and he's done his evaluation and he's giving me all this crap, and then he looks at me and he says, "And they're both independent thinkers, and apparently you are too." Like it was some sort of social disease.
Well, yes, it is. How dare you?
I thought it was a good thing, you know.
But if you look at our school systems and how archaic they are, we have the technology now to set people free with the education that's available, with electronic media that's available. We could individualize teaching to each student's level, what they needed, what they were most excited about, work on that. There's been pioneers out there who have done this kind of work and proven that if you let children go along what excites them most, and let them learn to read and write at their own speed, give them the messages, as you were saying, don't program yourself for failure. What brings you joy? What brings you happiness? Go after that. They'll teach themselves at an accelerated pace and much more meaningfully. But our school systems teach people to fail, teach people to take orders, teach people to endure pain and discomfort.
They teach them to conform.
Conform.
And they want little soldiers, all identical, and now you're seeing this movement to even public schools requiring students to be in uniforms, another
right.
conforming thing.
Time and time again. But if you look at our school systems as a way for those in power to perpetuate their power, the power elites, then they make perfect sense. They're doing their job very well. However, those of us like you and I who have children who we wanted to like themselves, feel good about life, develop their creativity, understand the spiritual possibilities, and become all they could be, my God, we were such a threat to the school systems. I constantly was trying to explain to teachers and going in and going, okay, next year my child needs to have these teachers because that one doesn't quite get anything near what I want my child to have. And we can do that kind of thing. I adopted both of my children from Peru in the middle of a civil war. They were abandoned because of the civil war, and really they had so much going against them when we adopted them, my wife and I, that they had no right to even be well-adjusted human beings, and yet they're both superheroes. My daughter's graduating high school this week, and my son just finished his first year of college. They're both really nice people who I consider friends and who I know are going to have quality lives because
that's sort of the goal of any parent, I think, to have a kid that you can turn loose on the world and let them spread their wings and fly.
That's it. It is, and yet so many of us, and I was part of it too, think that they're going to get that from the school system. They're going to get that from their coaches on sports teams. They're going to get that from volunteers, whether it's the Boys Club or Boy Scouts. And they can get some of that from some of those. But
and sometimes, too, when we say turn our children loose and let them spread their wings and fly, a lot of times as parents we want them to fly on our designated path.
Well, that was it. You know, I was raised a Catholic, and I do not... I have to fight with myself, but I do not think that religions are bad things. I think they, most organized religions have done bad things, but then so have most people. But there have been some amazingly wonderful things done by every organized religion and some amazingly spiritual people who have learned their spirituality through every organized religion. But I try to teach both of my children to understand that spirituality didn't have to be religion, that each person could find their own spiritual path. And one day my son came home from school, and he said, Dad, it's just too hard for me. Most of my friends are Christians. Is it okay with you if I'm a Christian? And I had to really dig deep and go, yes, if that's the path you want to take, that's fine with me, son. Once I was able to say that, he was able to be a Christian for a while and go down that path, and he probably still considers himself one, but he's one of those very open-minded Christians, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
but
you know,
as a parent, those are the challenges they give back to us. We have to detach. I think it was Cahil Gibran who said that our children are like arrows, that we can choose a certain amount of the wood, we can shape them, we can aim them, but then they have to fly their own course, and we have to be happy with that.
Exactly. You know, you have to remember that they are spreading their wings and flying.
It ain't easy when they're teenagers, let me tell you.
No.
I've never had better spiritual teachers than my children because they've tested every one of my beliefs and pushed every one of my buttons and made me look at all of my issues time and time again. And when I'm able to detach...
That's a great thing, though, because as they make you look at your beliefs and sometimes they're openly challenging verbally.
Exactly.
What you say is a truth.
Exactly.
You have to define it. You have to understand it. You have to look at it from every possible angle. And when you're done with that belief that you have been holding so dear, it's either stronger or, you know, it was more holy than holy. You
exactly.
know, and it's gone.
I've caught myself time and time again as my children grew up saying something and going, wait a second, that was my father. That's what he said, and it just came out. Make believe I didn't say that. What I meant to say was, because we have to stop ourselves and listen to ourselves, and I mean, and that's the whole thing when you spoke about enlightenment before, when we spoke about spirituality and the importance of creativity, all of those demand not only responsibility, but an attentiveness and a tireless reapplication and reexamination. It's not easy. It's well worth the price and the rewards, but... You know, ignorance is bliss, and there's a lot of people who don't do that who are much happier.
Yeah, you know, I guess I have always found that teaching something to someone else, be it a child, another adult, whatever, when you teach that idea to them, then you will truly understand what it is that you've been considering known by you.
Oh, so much so. I mean, every time I do a lecture or I conduct a workshop or I write something, you know, to have to explain it to someone else, to be questioned about it, to teach is the best way to learn, because you develop whole new levels of understanding. It's one thing to get concepts or to prove something in the field or to yourself, but when you have it on a deep enough level that you can share it with someone else and touch them in a way that will affect their lives, then you really get it.
Yeah, you know, I learned long ago that sometimes, you know, something that I think I know, I'm actually just parroting what I have been told.
Oh, so much so.
Until I can take it and make it reality for someone else.
Exactly.
It isn't real, you know, and,
exactly.
and then I've got a good grasp of the idea, understand how it works, and there's nothing in the world to compare with the look on someone's face, be it a child or adult, when they get an idea. You know, it's like a light bulb going on.
It is. And the more we can do that for each other, the more we all benefit. I mean, the best way to receive is to give. And I've just seen that so many time and time again. When when my books do well or I do well with workshops and what have you, I always send a certain amount of money down to the orphanages in Latin America and to the charities that are doing work down there with people that are really, you know, have so little. And whenever I do that, then all of a sudden my life becomes so much more open and so much more meaningful, because I'm not just working for me and so that I can have a nice car. I'm working to make the world a better place and to help those other people out there. And the more we give, the more we get on so many levels.
Yeah, you know, and I find, you know, like this show, it has expanded my universe each week. You know, it's, you know, amazing ideas come through this show, and it just lets me go, wow, you know, I never thought of it that way before.
Well, that's it. You have a responsibility to your listeners to be the screen, the funnel, to be the one that asks the questions for them in most cases. And as you do that, as you're doing it for them, you yourself just become, I mean, for you know, decades now, I've said to myself, wow, how did I get such a great job that I have to decide amongst, you know, thousands of articles and interviews what's going to serve our readers best that we put in each issue of the magazines? And having to do that, well, God, I have this wonderful job of exposing myself to all of these concepts and ideas and spiritual teachings and new ways to be creative and express your creativity that have so enriched my life.
Yeah, you know, I get so much out of these shows and talking, you know, like with you tonight. And, you know, I never thought of things sometimes the way we've explored it tonight. It's sort of like turning the Christmas tree upside down.
Amen.
It's still the same Christmas tree, but it's a whole different angle.
Well, that's it. I mean, people realize they can do that, that they can do... In Latin America, the shamans, a lot of their teachings are done using herbal substances that alter your sense of perspective. And my theory has always been, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. I don't espouse that people use drugs, but under certain conditions, especially under the tutelage of spiritual people, they can be very advantageous. And one time I was in the Amazon jungle and I used a substance called ayahuasca, which is a mixture of two vines that are heavily hallucinogenic. And I was with this ayahuasca priest, and I reached my hand out to the jungle, and I literally didn't know where I stopped and the jungle began. And it was about a week later that I realized all my life up until that point I had been wrong. I don't stop and the jungle doesn't begin, that we really are enmeshed and that we really are connected. And you know, we have that on so many levels that people just, we've been trained to think of ourselves as staunch individuals and that what we do is just us, you know, and it's really not. Everything is so connected, and everything we do adds, either makes the world or the universe a better place or makes it more difficult for others and a darker place.
You know, it makes me think of long ago, taking my son into the forest. We were in Arizona, and it's mostly ponderosas there. And they've been doing some logging in the area that we were in. And when you smell a ponderosa tree, when you actually stick your nose in a crevice on the trunk, you will smell vanilla or chocolate is what most people smell. It's sort of a, that sort of a smell. But when they would log in the area, it would have this overripe fruit sort of smell. The entire set of the trees, the unlogged trees, changed. And I always found that rather peculiar. You know, it was something that my son and I had talked about. And, you know, I remember it real vividly now, for instance, than they had a week before when there hadn't been any logging yet.
And that's true on so many levels. They did an experiment, I think it was at Yale, with kittens. And when the kittens were born, they placed horizontal blinders on some and vertical blinders on some others. And they had the kittens live their first 6 months with these masks where some could only see horizontally and some could only see vertically. And when they took them off, the ones that could only see vertically couldn't jump from the top of a bed to a floor or from a chair to a table because they couldn't see vertically. And those that had horizontal blinders would walk into table legs and chair legs because they couldn't see horizontally, vertically, whichever. And that's how we're raised. We're taught a view of reality, a very limited view of reality. And if we can break out of that perspective, the possibilities of how we can live our lives and what we can do are near endless, near countless. But we just all, when somebody says they're bored or they feel trapped, I just want to shake them and say, well, then stop, because there's no need for that. Depression, boredom, feeling trapped, those are all just states of mind that we can switch the switch on if we choose to gather our power around us and go forward. One of the things in Peru and the Amazon that I've been so exposed to is ritual. And again, religions use ritual on a regular basis. And most people think that only
Michael,
religion...
Michael, I hate to interrupt you, but it is time for our hourly break.
Not a problem.
When we come back, folks, we're going to explore some more with Michael Langevin. In the meantime...
soul because your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. Your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. When evening rolls around, it's time to go to town. Where do you go? To rock and roll. Where do you go? To rock and roll. Where do you go? To rock and roll.
This is James Arthur Janchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio, inviting you to join me on a road to truth via the path of non-contradiction. Join us each week on Feet to the Fire, a show with the goals of examining a subject matter on its own merits and test how it stands up to the many possibilities found in reality, all without pre-drawn conclusions found in personal bias. No left or right wings here. No pounding the pulpit of ego-driven my way or the highway attitudes. But there are no free passes given either. Answers to questions are important, but equally important is the reasons and methods used to find the answer. The lack of contradiction is the final judge here. On Feet to the Fire. Sunday evenings. Live. How do you listen?
Fire.
www.feettofire.com for more information.
The Unabridged Universe. Join us from 7 to 9 Central Standard Time, Saturdays, as host Jason Wilson and I, Victoria Rose, bring you the perspectives of guests on every topic, from extraterrestrials on the edge of the galaxy to issues that affect you right here at home. It's a big universe out there, and we're likely to cover anything. Do you have any topics that you'd like to have discussed? Know any researchers or free thinkers out there you'd like to have on the show? Log on to www.unabridgeduniverse.com. And let us know, only on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Do you like to ask questions about everything? Would you like to escape from your proverbial box? Just leap out and explore our world in ways you've never imagined? You can have that opportunity. As we grow and expand, new features will be added, allowing you to experience radio programming at a fresh new level. I invite you to join me, November Hansen, host of Voice of the People. Together, we can expand our horizons and peer into multifaceted possibilities. This program will broadcast live Saturday evenings on the Paranormal Radio Network.
What would you do if you knew all the things we know? Won't you stand up for truth? Or would you turn away to?
Get your dose of truth with the Truth Hurts Radio Show with your host Charles Giuliani, Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. The truth hurts, ignorance kills.
What would you do if you?
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, Joe Montaldo. Right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Welcome back to the dot, and tonight's guest is Michael Lenzerman. Michael, one of the questions in the virtual auditorium that was typed out in text was, what's your website?
And you know, it's a funny thing right now. For the first time in almost three decades, I don't have one. We're negotiating with two large media companies to them to take over a large share of the magazines that I've founded. And part of the negotiations was to shut down not only the three websites for the three magazines, but my own until the negotiations are completed. So presently, people can email me at michaelpeterlangevin.com. If they can spell it, and And a ton of things that I've, the interviews that I've done and things that I've written are available online if they search under michaelpetelangevin.com, especially if they search under Michael Petelangevin, Secrets of the Amazon or Secrets of the Ancient Incas. The number is sort of mind-boggling to me that of how many how many things come up on the internet. It makes me feel important once in a while. But I have no website presently. I'm expecting that these negotiations will be finished here this fall. I hope maybe even the middle of the summer if I'm really lucky. And by much before Christmas, that we'll have magicalblend.com and michaelpetelangevin.com and nbhonline.com and transitionsmag.com back up and running on a new expanded level far beyond my ability up till now. But for now, none of them are available.
Now, your books, okay?
Yep.
One thing that I always do try to make sure happens is that writers get a chance to plug their books.
Great.
Where
on Amazon.com and got most book sites online and a number of bookstores, they can get Secrets of the Ancient Incas.
Uh-huh.
Spiritual Business, The True Story of Magical Blend Magazine. Amazon Shaman right now is going into a second printing. I have copies of it. I think the publisher has copies of it, so they can email me at Michael Peter Langevin, L-A-N-G-E-V-I-N, and they go for $19 if they want them. But they're not available presently at most bookstores. There might be some remainders someplace or some used ones. I'm not sure. I don't keep track of that, unfortunately. A Magical Universe is available online, which is an anthology of the best of the first 50 issues of Magical Blend magazine, and I did many of the interviews and some of the articles in it and a lot of the connecting parts between chapters. It features people like Robin Williams, Jerry Garcia, Timothy Leary, James Redfield, Dan Millman, Gene Houston, Andrew Weil, and on and on. Solstice Shift is another anthology that we did of a number of people that appeared in Magical Blend magazine and how to deal with the changes that are coming down in society. It has Neil Donald Walsh, Lynn Andrews, Shakti Gawain, Douglas Rushkoff, Sirona Knight, myself, and a number of other people, and just a way to do it. I was in the anthology Healing the Heart of the World, wonderful anthology brought together by Dawson Church. I believe it's, give me a minute, I can do this. Ariel Ford brought together, I think it was Hot Chocolate for the Mystical Soul 1, 2, and 3 that all have articles by me in them. And I think all of those are available online.
Okay.
And there's probably others, I know there's others I'm forgetting. And I've written articles not only for Magical Blend and Natural Beauty and Health and Transitions, but for a number of other magazines and periodicals. Some of them are available online.
It won't be hard for our listeners at all.
No, they just type in my name online and they'll be overwhelmed.
Okay. Well, going back to some of the topics that we were doing before the break.
We started to talk about ritual, and I kind of wanted to make that point, if it's okay with you, Chia.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
In Peru, in the Incan society, in the Amazon, ritual is extremely important. And in the Western world, we've given it over mostly to magicians and religions. And I urge people to bring religion, not religion so much, but ritual back into their lives. Religion is a matter of choice. As I said earlier, it works for some and not for others. But we can use ritual. In the Andy Mountains, when a couple decides to get married and move in together, the whole village stops what they're doing. They get together, and before they even dig the hole for the foundation, they pray to the mountain gods, which they call the Apus, and to Pachamama, the earth goddess, to Inti, the goddess of the sun, to a whole pantheon of Incan gods and goddesses that they still believe exist and worship. And they ask them for blessing. They ask Pachamama for permission to pierce her skin to dig the foundation. As they put up the adobe walls or the thatch walls, depending on what it is, they say prayers of hope
the children, godparents bring the door, even before the godchildren are conceived, one, as a ritual of allowing in only positive spirits. They hang totems in the corners of the building as it's erected to keep out bad energies and to bring in positive energies. As they're putting on the roof, they tell off-color jokes and stories to make sure that that it's a fertile existence for the couple, and that they have number of children and that whatever they want, that all the good things in their life multiply. And then when they're done, they celebrate late into the night until the sun comes up, drinking the local chicha beer that they make themselves, and the history of the family and the history of the village. And until you've taken part in something like that, you don't know the power of ritual fully. I've had it one time when I was in Paris. The sun was rising at a high mass at Notre Dame Cathedral, and the organ was playing, and they were singing, and the incense were burning, and it was a similar experience. Those moments of ritual we can bring into washing the dishes, filing our papers, changing our children's diapers. I say this because I've done it. I didn't enjoy doing too many of those
things. A lot of times, you know, I've always said that ritual is a way of focusing our mind.
Exactly.
And a lot of times we fail to recognize appropriately, perhaps, the rituals in our lives.
So much so.
Rituals of becoming an adulthood. In modern society, it's things like graduating from high school.
Yep.
Graduating from college, going away to college, their first job, their driver's license, you know, and so forth and so on. And we don't celebrate.
We don't make them magical. This week I've been working on a letter to my daughter as she's graduating high school, just remembering her victories up till this point and giving her mild parental advice and wishes for her future. I think each of us have that opportunity to make every passing, every moment into a ritual. I'm terrible at filing papers, and running a business for 3 decades, I've had to file a number of papers in ways that I have to find them again. I'll pray to the angels to help me file those papers when they get too out of hand. I'll make it into a ritual, and I know it's the power of the spiritual intention, the angels helping me, the fact it's a ritual that I'm able to file it all. Because if I don't focus my intent in that way, I'm just a little too creative, and I have papers everywhere that I can never find the one I want.
Yeah, to the paper thing, I tend to take notes on the backs of receipts and half an envelope.
I love my notebook. I love my computer notebook. I can now make lists there so I don't lose them. Because for years I did the same thing.
I now have come up with an acceptable combination of the computer, which isn't real portable. I mean, even with a laptop, there you do have certain requirements.
Yes.
And then I have, you know, a purse-sized organizer thing with, it has pages, and at least, the notes may not be in order to anybody else, at least they're at a fixed location.
And it's a matter of fun. I think if people give themselves permission to do what you just said, to find their own style, their own approach, to experiment with it and see what works, and maybe it just works for a while, and then when it stops working, to find something else.
Exactly. This replaces the previous system.
Right.
And the reason was I needed something that was a little bit more compact that I didn't have to carry a suitcase around bring it with me.
Before they came out with the personal computer, I mean, we did the magazine in the early years before personal computers came out, and I used to have piles of notes in every room in my apartment, and I could never find any of which list was going where. So it's really a matter of evolving it, like everything else, not being so creative that it doesn't function, but allowing your creativity to serve you. And even with those things, making them into a ritual can really help.
And don't forget the celebrating part. I mean, that's the fun of the ritual.
When we find a list, especially. when we finish things on the list and we can check them off or take them off, it's a huge celebration. My to-do list tends to go up miles and miles.
if I get to the end of the day and I don't have a mysterious phone number for somebody, I don't know why I have this number, where this number is, or who it's for, or how long I've had it, that's a good day.
Yeah, well, and they don't happen too often like that.
Yeah, you know, that's a great day. And you know, sometimes you have a name, and you have no idea why you have the name.
Oh.
And what does it mean?
I have a drawer full of those names and numbers, and sometimes I go through it trying to match them up.
Yeah,
usually they get back in touch with me because I didn't get to them.
Yep, but getting back to the topic.
The list. You had lists.
The shamans, actually.
Okay, good.
That was what I was interested in. You had mentioned the use of hallucinogenic substances.
Yes.
Why is this so important in their culture?
Well, because, and this is my explanation, and I'm sure you could get a number of others, but we are such creatures of habit that the kittens that we talked about earlier, we learn to see things through our perspective. When we have a huge disaster, they often turn into blessings on one level or another because they've broken us out of our habits. They helped us to review or re-perceive our existence. Hallucinogenic, especially not chemical, but herbal hallucinogenics, each one of them has a different plant spirit to it and can allow you to see far beyond our material world. On peyote, on Jimson weed, on psilocybin, on ayahuasca, I've been able to astral travel, to speak to spiritual entities, to make landmarks in realms that I didn't even know existed. And then I can reconnect to those places through meditation or prayer or in dreams. And I know they exist, and my repertoire of spiritual tools, of spiritual allies, is so much extended, so much wider, so much more possibilities. You can do these things without hallucinogenic substances. I don't think people should experiment without people who have experience with them or have expanded knowledge, because I've had too many friends growing up in the 60s who ended up in mental institutions or dead because of bad use of substances.
Yeah.
But,
you know, logic tells me that they have to be dangerous to the people using them. And I've personally seen people who were in the hospital after the religious use of peyote. And I know the medicine men would say that that was the bad spirits and you know, that they, you know, weren't doing things right. And that's why. So what does the shaman say about the physical risk of using the substance?
If a knife can't cut you, it can't cut anything else. The sharper it is, the deeper a cut it will make in yourself if you're not careful or knowledgeable on how to use it, if you grab it by the wrong end. Hallucinogenics are a lot like that. They're a tool, like fire, like a knife. And if you're guided by someone who has experiences of and knowledge, then you can cut through your perceptions, your habits, and break into higher realms and higher ways of functioning that allow you to understand and to live just so much more abundantly. But if you don't use them right, or if you go down the dark path with them, then they end up putting you in a very bad place, and people have to know that there's a risk. And a lot of people choose not to take that risk, and some people who choose to take the risk make mistakes and suffer the consequences. It's just part of existence.
Now, do you think that the use of these substances is a negative insofar as shamans being taken seriously by civilized societies, you might say?
I'm going to take a risk here, and I'm going to say I think our Western world moving to a place of saying just no to all things they consider drugs is the negative. Throughout history, spiritual leaders and shamans, whether it's wine in the church or it's peyotes with the Huichol Indian, have used substances to communicate, to find ways to experience death and rebirth, to communicate with the gods and the divine, to find better ways of touching inspiration and bringing it back to their village, to their tribe, to enrich their existence. I think at this crossroads, it's part of the choice that people have to make, whether or not they choose to do that. There are many people who never touched hallucinogenic, who are extremely spiritual, who are perhaps enlightened, who are extremely creative. It's not a requirement. It is a path that people can take, and I think extremely valid path. People who choose to say that it makes shamans invalid, God, they're closing a door to so many possibilities that I've chosen to walk through.
Okay, well, that is, you know, it's definitely food for thought there.
That's what we put out there.
Shift this a little bit now. Can an average person develop paranormal abilities through shamanism?
Oh, an average person has paranormal abilities and can develop it in countless ways. And I don't mean to beat it dead, but back to being addicted to the media, to TV, to video games, to the internet, if we just take one night a week and tell ourselves we're not going to use anything electronic, we're not going to be distracted, we're just going to either spend it in prayer, in meditation, in ritual, in exploring creative expression, and we just do that one night a week, or one weekend a month, or one set period, the effects that it has on people's lives. If people can set apart 20 minutes a day that they pray or meditate, the quality of existence improves on so many levels. If people want to make those differences, we all have the ability to read minds, to communicate with the dead, to that all the answers of the universe are available to us if we just believe it and explore possibilities on how to find those more often. So shamanism is a very valid path, and it's worked very well for me. I don't claim to be a shaman. I claim to have studied with and be taught by a number of them, but I'll always be a student. That's a path I've taken to be a bridge, to meet with those who are spiritual, especially in the shamanic studies, and to bring back that information to the Western world as much as I can.
You know, the older I get, the one amazing thing that has been brought home many, many times is the more I learn, the more I realize how ignorant I really am.
Anyone who says they have the answers or they are the answer, I go running from.
Oh, it's like someone who tells you how honest they are or how religious they are.
Yeah,
hang on to your wallet and get going.
Right. I'm sorry, Speedy Burritos is the slowest burrito joint in our town. And I think a name that people put on something, you have to really look at, is this reality or what they want you to think? You know, it's that old magic trick, watch this hand while I do something with the other one. And so many times, I taught my children over the years, don't listen to what people say, watch what they do. Because
yes,
it's really the results that are important. What the fruits of one's efforts speak to how somebody acts in the middle of a disaster, talks about, or when things aren't going their way, talks about their character of being, talks about their true beliefs to me.
Oh, yeah. Now, sliding off on a slightly different tangent again,
wait,
reading your bio, you know, here's a question I really have to ask, especially for those who've known me over the long term, because I have a long history with ufology. Did UFOs and extraterrestrials interact with the Incan culture?
Very much so. The stories are just mind-boggling that I've heard down there. Because the Andes and the Amazon are still isolated in so many ways, because you can go 30 miles from Cusco, Peru, with over 300,000 tourists a year, and people are still living in the ancient Incan ways to a greatest degree, carrying on in Catholic churches, carrying on Quechuan masses in the ancient traditions. There's an acceptance of these things that are just that are just, we could do a whole show on this, Chia, but let me just tell a couple of stories. One time in the Amazon, I was, a lot of times you have to kind of pass an initiation or at least a time of acceptance with new shamans, even if you have a letter of introduction, so to speak. And I was bothering this shaman and trying to get him to share some of his knowledge and experiences, and he said to me, "So you want to know about UFOs and aliens?" And I basically said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, we had one crash in the river down there." And I said, "Where is it?" And he said, "It's the river. You know, it washed away." And I said, "Oh." And he said, "But a couple of the bodies washed on shore. One of the bodies washed on shore." And I said, "Where is it?" And he said, "This is the Amazon. Everything rots." And I said, "Oh." And he said, "But we didn't want it to rot, so we cooked it and I ate it." And I said, "What?" And he said, "It's a good thing I had a good apprentice, because for the next 3 weeks, I was tasting colors and smelling shapes and hearing feelings and everything was confused and I didn't know which way was up, and since I've been back the whole world looks different, but it was stronger than any substance I have ever done." Now I don't know if he was just telling the white gringo a story, but what a wonderful story it was and how it stretched my imagination. Another time I spoke to this shaman in the Andes, and it was a similar sort of thing. He said, "Oh, no, I've never met any, but my uncle who taught me how to do shamanism, he said that there was a hole over there in the other valley, and he used to just walk through and talk to them all the time. But when the priests came, they told him to stop. So he closed the hole so nobody else could go through and talk to them, because it wasn't approved of by the authorities." In Lake Titicaca, not far from Lake Titicaca on the Bolivian side, there's ruins called Tiwanaku, and they have found skulls there that are bigger than bread boxes, and others that are pointed in shapes that are kind of unimaginable to us. You can find some pictures of them on the internet, and I have photos of them. They're available. You can see them in museums down there. They've been found around Machu Picchu and in the Coca Canyon around Arequipa and in a number of other places. I believe that before the Incas, there was a Tiwanaku society that existed, and that aliens lived side by side with the people of Tiwanaku, and that a lot of the secrets and the way of viewing things and the way and the ruins that were built were actually co-built by extraterrestrials. The Nazca lines I could go on and on. I'm going to stop after the Nazca lines. The Nazca lines I think they're 75 or 100 miles south of Lima on the coast. And from the ground, all you see is lines of rocks in the desert, and you don't think they're anything. But if you go up on an airplane, you see geometric designs, and you see a spider monkey, and you see a hummingbird, and all of these pictures that can only be viewed from high up in the air. They tell tourists that the natives used to sew together llama skins and fill them with hot air to go up and see these things, and that's why they designed them, so they could do this.
I really cannot see an ancient culture doing that, because...
Nor can I. It's a lot easier for me to believe.
Practical oriented, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot easier for me to believe that there was extraterrestrials and that this was their way of communicating with them. It goes on and on. The contact with extraterrestrials down there and the UFOs that have been seen. I actually have some pictures that I do in my lectures and workshops that were given to me by German anthropologists that were down there, and of UFOs that they saw over the Andes Mountains. It's just amazing.
You know, I find that absolutely fascinating. So, you know, have you heard of current contact with UFOs in Latin America?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been crop circles down there. One fellow, see, because I think they have the same problem in Canada, but he said one of the fellows in the Amazon, I was talking to him, and he said, "Oh, we have some of those things called crop circles down here, but when they come, they come in the jungle, and it either grows up really fast, or black helicopters come in and chop down that whole part of the jungle." Yeah, in recent times, a number of people, to the degree of even pop culture, Shirley MacLaine has spoken about seeing UFOs over the Andes Mountains. And a number of people have had experiences right at Machu Picchu where they've seen UFOs. Because there's so many isolated pockets in the Amazon and the Andes, some believe that they... But that the UFOs feel safer or more comfortable to go there on a more regular basis. Others believe because that energy, that Pachamama energy that I was talking about, is coming in so powerfully through Lake Titicaca, the Amazon, and Machu Picchu, that they're drawn to this energy and helping to tweak it. But yeah, there's more UFO stories. There's quite a few here in the United States, but there's more UFO stories there probably by 5, if not 10.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. Now, do shamans and magicians ever talk of contact with extraterrestrial entities, whether psychically, spiritually, or physically?
Oh, all of the above. And not all shamans. What's wonderful about Latin America, especially Peru, is it's sort of like anyone who's read 100 Years of Solitude or seen a Fellini movie. I spoke of nonlinear before. They don't, because they were first the Incan culture, and maybe not first, but strongly influenced by the Incan culture, the Aztecs, the Mayan culture, depending on where you are in Latin America, and then colonized by the Spanish and the Portuguese, who have a whole different value system than the English or the French.
Uh-huh.
You have a whole different approach to life. And there's this okayness with magic and the bizarre and the unexplained. There's an expectation for it that we just don't have up here. When you go down, when you spend any, I mean, a lot of people go down to see Machu Picchu for a week, or maybe two, seldom a month. But if you spend 3, 4, 6 months down there, as I have, all of a sudden your way of viewing reality shifts to such a degree that you, when you come back here, it just looks like people are running at high speed on a rat race or on one of those hamster wheels, and that their values are all wrong. When I come back here, I remember I don't really care what kind of shoes people are wearing or who hit more runs than Barry Bonds or what movie star is having what controversy. But down there, there's an expectation of magic being a way of life. And UFOs are very much a part of that. A number of shamans that I met felt that they could call them to them or could communicate them. That one of them explained to me that he felt that the extraterrestrials, or a number of the extraterrestrials, actually live in the fourth dimension, so that they can come back and forth onto Earth, and that would explain so much of why now you see them, now you don't, and some see them and some don't, and some are captured and altered and some aren't.
I hope to understand the concept of dimensions.
Okay.
So far, it's eluded me entirely.
Okay, well, let's do baby steps, because that always works for me. If we have a table and there is a one-dimensional being on that table, it can only go in a straight line.
Okay.
If it's a two-dimensional being, it can go in circles on that table, but only on that flat surface. If it's a three-dimensional being, it can go up from the table, down from the table, or in circles, you know, so it has, we're three-dimensional beings. We have an understanding of time and space. But if you go into the fourth dimension, then all of a sudden, time and space become as open to us as moving in circles isn't to the one or two dimensional being. Did that make sense?
Not quite yet.
Okay. I thought it was baby steps.
I must be just incredibly hard.
No. It's a hard concept until you spend time with it, and I think a lot of people don't spend time with it. Because
even, you know, I first thought about it, you know, dimensions in terms of space navigation. We don't have, you know, someone like me does not have the ability to think about navigation in terms of anything but north, south, east, west, you know,
right.
Front, back, left, right. That's the sort of thinking that someone like me has.
And that's a wonderful analogy. That's just a different way of saying what I was saying, because if you were navigating in space, you
have up and down as well, you
exactly,
know?
Exactly. And then when you bring in the concepts of Star Trek, Star Wars, you have warp drive and you have wormholes and you can hop huge distances in minutes. So,
but I have no words or no ideas or no concepts to explain
to movement in a three-dimensional world. I need a plane underneath me in order to for my mind to comprehend it.
And that's so true of most of us, because outside of science fiction and fantasy, most of us don't deal with the concepts of dimensions. We live in our three-dimensional world, and we accept that as just being the way it is. And as you say, you know, flying in an airplane stretches the definition of that. But flying in an airplane is a wonderful example of the next dimension. If time and space weren't limitations to us, if we could conceive of a time or a place with
time... So if we could move through time, like do through our world that we live in now,
exactly. Then
would be a fourth dimension.
Exactly. If we could move through space so that we could say, now I'm in Tahiti, now I'm in Egypt, then that would be a fourth dimension. Because now we've expanded our whole way of moving, of being. There are shamans I've met in the Andes Mountains who say that part of the changes that are coming down for the human race who choose to accept them is that we will walk through the cracks of time.
Well, you know, long ago I heard stories of the ancient ones, you know, in the Southwest, and that they could move through time somehow, that they would leave from one place and arrive in a very, very distant location on the same day. Now, how they knew it was the same day, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And you know how old these stories were? I didn't even know that. I assume they were referring to the Anasazis, but, you know, maybe I'm wrong. But they were referring to some ancient tribe that had lived there long before, you know, post-Columbian times, you might say.
A lot of the ancients had understandings. I believe there have been very advanced civilizations that have existed in the Earth. And if you read some of the radical anthropologists, they talk about oopots or things that have been found that just don't fit in our definition of what happened before. And these ancient civilizations that were more advanced in many ways than we were had understandings of way of moving in reality, in other dimensions, that we haven't arrived at yet. We've developed electronic and mechanical things that they didn't have. But we are at a crossroads where we can choose to step into the levels of their being and knowledge and moving if we, enough of us, make that choice in our own day-to-day existence. But it's
the new mental frontier?
Yes, very much so.
Now, playing the devil's advocate on that, ancient
Please.
Societies, you know, of course, you know, a lot of people do believe they had knowledge that is lost to us today.
Right.
But if they were so smart, how come they're dead and gone, you know?
But
their societies are dead and gone, their culture is mostly dead and gone in many cases.
Yes, and the answer to that is the same thing as I said earlier about the enlightened teachers that I've met, the very advanced shamans that I've met. Each of them have areas that they're highly advanced in, that they're amazingly insightful and knowledgeable about, far beyond anyone else I've met like them. Yet they have other areas that, you know, I mean, Einstein had a hard time tying his shoe or combing his hair. They have areas that they just have their weaknesses. Each of these societies had their weaknesses and their shortcomings. They weren't the perfect society. This is a world of limitations. They expanded in certain areas and areas of knowledge and abilities that we have not reached yet. But in other areas, they had huge weaknesses that destroyed them. And that was...
Well, you know, and too, there's a lot of stories, you know, this is North American stories.
Right.
About various cultures that actually fell because of, let's say, a dark half being taken by their leaders or a substantial portion of their population. Even referring to the Chaco Canyon and the controversy over whether or not cannibalism was going on.
And that always exists. There's always the temptation for individuals and societies. That's part of the crossroads I've been talking about. Humanity's at the place where we can choose to step up and live unselfishly, to care as much about nature and other people as we do about ourselves and our children, or
to care more about how many cars we have and how big a house we have and how impressed other people are, and to live selfishly and greedily. And those are the dark side.
To kill ourselves by our own tail.
Very much so. And if we choose, we're given that Earth is a free choice zone on a spiritual level, and that's what makes the victory so much better when we make the right choices. Our society and each individual in it is at a point where we've been born at a time that we can choose to make the sacrifices that are required to evolve spiritually to a higher level than we have in recorded history, or to go back and learn the lessons a different way. And they're both all right, but me, I'm working really hard to choose those more spiritually unselfish, evolved places and help other people to do the same.
Well, you know, in listening to you tonight, it's like, enlightenment sounds like a great idea. But how does a person get there?
And they get there by baby steps, and they get there by forgiveness, and they get there by making mistakes and being willing to take risks. I mean, I've run a business for 30 years. I went through 2 bankruptcies in that period of time. Because every time the business was doing well, I pushed it to the next level. I wanted to reach a wider audience. I wanted to fine-tune it so that it spoke more clearly to people about things that were undefinable. And in doing that, I made some terrible mistakes. Some people thought that made me a failure. Me, I just thought it made me a better business person and a better spiritual teacher, because I had gone through the challenges, the pit of failure, the pit of defeat, the huge mistakes. We can all do that each day in our lives. And we're not going to do it 24 hours a day, every day. We're going to have times where we're depressed, where we've made mistakes, where we're lazy, where we're selfish and greedy. And when we catch ourselves, we say, oops, I fell off my path. I forgot what my goals were. I forgive myself for that, and I'm going to try to do it longer and harder and better, more enjoyably. And we just take those baby steps, whether it's saying the prayers we were taught by our religion growing up, or it's exploring meditation, or, as I started saying earlier in the show, the creative process is so important. Our schools teach us we're not creative, but for me, it's writing. When I get to a place in my writing that it's just flowing from me, it's an altered state for me, and I know I'm connected to the divine on a whole other level. Some people do it through gardening, through cooking, through dance, through pottery, through there's a million ways to express creativity. But when we pray, we're asking the divine for what we want. When we meditate, we're listening to what the divine wants of us. When we do ritual, we're trying to join with the divine. When we express our creativity, we're becoming one with the divine. So that it's making those times to do all of those or a certain number of those in our day-to-day existence that can make just such a difference.
So it sounds like really, you know, by bringing all these things, bringing spirituality and joy and lots of positive things into your day-to-day life, it just has an expanding sort of effect.
That's been my experience, and all each of us can speak to is our own experience. But, you know, I've had the joy of hiring people who, you know, didn't have any belief systems like mine, and have them work with me for 3 to 5 years and watch them as they pick and chose which of mine through my example and through our business worked for them, and watching their lives improve and evolve and change to a much more fulfilling existence for them. I speak at lectures, and sometimes I speak at the same expo or the same festival or whatever 2 years later or 3 years later, and I have people come up to me and say, you know, you said this, and it stuck with me, and I did these things, and my life just changed so radically. Thank you so much for that. And so that's my experience. If people just become clear that to question what they believe and what they expect is going to happen to their life and where they spend their thoughts and whether they're worrying all their time or living in their fears or living in their hopes and their desires, their positive, unselfish desires more so, and then focusing their intent. You know, I'm a real goal setter. I set short-term goals and long-term goals. I try to do it every month. I do it at least every quarter. And then at New Year's, I make a point, because most of the world's doing it then, to reset my goals, to fine-tune my goals and see what I achieve. And then when I get depressed or when I feel like I'm a failure, I go back and I re-examine my goals and I go, okay, I did achieve this and I did do that and, oh, I am supposed to be working towards that and that and that. And it keeps me aligned and going towards something.
Yeah, and I can completely relate to that. Over the last 4 years, I've discovered that I can do things that I never dreamed of doing. You know, I've seen my entire world change. You know, in a sense, you know, I've learned to fly.
That's it.
And, you know, to be able to share that sort of feeling with other people is great. Because for me, it has been great to actually discover that, yeah, I can fly. And I'm not bad at it either, you know?
Exactly. And if we can give that to one other person, then our lives are worthwhile. And if we can give it to a large number, then, wow, aren't we blessed? You know, as I said earlier in the program, I say thanks a lot. I mean,
you know, we've seen so many changes in our world over the last, you know, even decade.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like this show, you know, 20 years ago, it wouldn't have been possible.
No.
You know,
when the internet first came out, I was like, explain that to me again.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing, you know, and you talk about internet radio now, and that's kind of like an oxymoron in itself. It's not really radio because there aren't any waves floating around in the air, really.
Right.
But it's, you know, you can, a grassroots way to spread information
right.
to a large number of people.
Right.
And our whole world has shifted because we're not stuck on the three big media companies anymore. You know, we've got
countless
ways.
Ones. They've got choices
yeah.
like we've never had before.
You know, it's just
and
amazing.
The information that's available to people, I mean, the only excuse for people not living the lives they want is that they accepted the brainwashing or they accepted the victimhood. Because all of it's there at their fingertips. And it's far beyond the internet is a source. It's a wonderful source. And really, if people spend time in meditation or prayer ritual, they find that they have their own internal internet and that they can tap into answers and to spiritual energies far beyond their imagination.
There's an amazing amount of possibilities, and I think the internet just perhaps exposed us to, you know, a few of them, and like a virus, you know, it's spread, and, you know, in a good way,
yeah.
because now we have the potential to realize a lot more than we could have dreamed possible, you know, 20
Amen.
Years ago.
Well said. Very well said.
It's just amazing to think of, you know, what we can do. You know, we are nearing the end of our time tonight. So did you have any last-minute thoughts the most important thing that you've learned?
That anyone can do it. You know, I mean, really, you can make a case that I have no right to live the life I live, which to me seems like a fairy tale, my life, but I chose to do it. And you know, I've watched so many people who like myself, you know, just decide, I'm going to live a life that means more. I'm going to live a life that is out of a book or out of a movie. And then they start doing it on a more consistent basis. That you said earlier is, you know, can shamanism lead to paranormal experiences and develop paranormal skills? We all have them. That nobody has to be a victim unless they choose to be a victim, and that forgiveness and love, you know, are two of the most basic, trite, and most powerful, meaningful things that are out there. If you forgive yourselves and other people that wrong you, and if you live your life from a loving place and a forgiving place, then, you know, miracles are yours.
Well, I know I've often told people that anger and resentment and hatred can become like a cancer and consume you from within.
They do. No, they really do. And people just don't realize that. If they, you know, I've heard it said that, and being a parent, I'm really glad I heard it said that the mistakes we make with our children are really gifts, because all parents make mistakes. And if our children can heal from our mistakes and from the things they think we didn't do right or wish we had done differently, then they can heal from anything life gives them, anything life throws at them. if people go through life saying, I wish my parents had been better, or my parents did bad, or I had this terrible thing happen and it ruined my life, then it's ruined. But if they say, that was an unfortunate thing, or that was a gift because now I can look beyond it, I can forgive those involved, and I can find a better way to exist.
I think, too, being a parent is a good way to learn to forgive your own parents for their mistakes.
Oh, I didn't understand.
And just let it go and get past it and go on.
I didn't understand how brilliant my parents were until I had children.
I think that's when you're standing in those shoes yourself, you realize none of them come with owner's manuals.
Oh, God, life does. But we can write our own. If we choose.
You know, there aren't any directions for kids, and just because you did one doesn't mean you do a second.
No, and just because something worked with one doesn't mean it'll work with the other one. Actually, it'll work just the opposite with the other one.
Yep. That's just about the way it goes.
It really is true. And as I said, if anyone, you know, I do listen workshops across the country. If anyone wants to email me, I'll email them my schedule. The books are available, Secrets of the Ancient Incas, and Spiritual Business, and Magical Universe, and Souls to Shift, and all the others online. Back issues of Magical Blend are being sold all over the place online, and Natural Beauty and Health, and Transitions. And my email is michaelpeterlangevin, LANGEVIN, at yahoo.com. If anyone wants to email me with questions or to get a copy of Secrets of the Amazon Shamans, or some way I can give them advice, or share whatever makes sense.
This is probably not fair because I may not even have your calendar right there with you. What is the next place you're going to be speaking?
They're having a wisdom conference in San Francisco. I think it's in August. And I'm doing a workshop in Sacramento. I think it's in July. And I don't have my calendar in front of me.
I'm becoming psychic already, you know.
Yeah. there's something on the East Coast later in the fall, and I'm not sure if it's Boston or Miami.
Only one who depends on that calendar. Right?
No, I think it was Sherlock Holmes who said, I don't know if the sun circles the planets or the planet circles the sun. I don't keep that information, fill my brain with the information I can look up at any time.
Yeah, our minds are great computers, but sometimes it can be a little
better.
Difficult. Well, you know, you access it in a different way is the way I guess I would explain it. Now, when you're doing your workshops and whatnot, you know, what is the goal to a workshop?
The goal is to help everyone find their next step in whether it's finding their next step in spiritual unfoldment, in creative unfoldment, in self-empowerment, in a better life.
Don't you find that they kind of all go hand in hand?
I do, but I try to let people come with their preconceived notions of what they want. I always ask at the beginning, you know, who came here for what, and then I try to address the needs of the audience, the needs of the students who come, because that's part of being a bridge. If I talk to them about what they want to learn, then eventually they'll learn much more than they came for. And you know, shamanism, the occult, magic, it's all just tools to help people unfold and become more of who they're capable of becoming. We're all gods and goddesses if we allow ourselves to become.
That's a great way to put it, I guess. You know, because it's only been over the last few years that, you know, I began to understand so much more. You know, and often I tell friends who are the same age as me, you know, it's really not fair. About the time you get it together, it starts falling apart.
Well, the aging process is an interesting thing, I have to admit. It's
yeah,
own levels of challenges. And, yes, wisdom comes at a price.
Yeah, you know, it's really not fair sometimes because it is true. Just about the time you start getting it together, you start, you know, feeling like you're falling apart. You start questioning your own mental sharpness and so forth and so on. And, you know, it's like
we got to do something about this. You know, we need to get smarter quicker or hanging together a little longer here.
Well, I think that's the key. I've taken up yoga, which in my youth I used to kind of poo-poo as a trendy sort of thing because it keeps my body limber and it keeps my back from hurting. It allows me to do more of the arduous mountain climbing and exercising that I like to do. I'm much more aware of my diet. Living in the country, we grow a lot of our own fruit and vegetables because I really think it makes a difference what we eat, and I don't want to be huge and out of shape. And I think that the more levels we can be aware of a control we have in our lives, the quality of our aging process is another thing that we can greatly affect.
And that is a great, great idea. Besides that, growing your own fruits and vegetables, keep it connected to the earth.
Oh, so much. So often I'll lose perspective in the office and I'll come home and work in the garden and all of a sudden I remember who I am and what's important to me, really.
Yeah, it's hard to think that you're all that when you're digging in the dirt or mixing manure
and whatnot. Shoveling horse manure out in the barn really reminds me that, I'm no better than anyone else, and you got to do basics in order to get to the big stuff.
That's very, very true. Well, Michael, you have been a fascinating guest, and I am thrilled to have had this opportunity to speak with you.
It's a pleasure to have spoken with you, and thank you for your great questions.
Yeah, so all things must come to an end, and now we're at the end of our time. So is there anything real brief now that you want to say?
I urge any of your listeners or any of the people that listen to this in the archives to go out and do it. Magic. You know, there's magic on Main Street. There's mystical energies in all mundane things, and it's up to each of us to find them and to live that way.
Okay. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed tonight's show with Michael every bit as much as I have. You can email me with topics and gifts that you would like to hear on Shades in the Future at gscott@gmail.com. And tune in next week to hear Vaishali from www.youarewhatyoulove.com. In the meantime, laugh every day, smile in your sleep, and enjoy each day as it dawns in your life. Have a great week, and I'm your host, Gia Scott, and see you next week. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I feel the hunger, it's